free audiobook written by Alain Besançon. Performed by Darren Elliker. Chapter 10. The limousine which awaited them at the station in Boston led them to a small airport, where they boarded a luxurious private jet to a destination known only to Virgil. On board, Eva was isolated in her cabin, to devote the few hours of the flight to a deep meditation, which was her way of preparing for her performance. Virgil had taken a desk isolated from the rest of the plane, and had to finalize the preparations for the improvised ballet. Milos finished a meal worthy of the greatest restaurants. Lost in thought, he was as if hypnotized by the movement of amber liquid whose perfume scent wafted up the sides of the bohemian crystal of the glass lodged in his hand. He took a sip of Armagnac, but the fire of the alcohol could not dominate the ardent inferno which little by little consumed each part of his being. Underneath the fire brooded the frozen wave of his paranoia, which urged him to leave these two strangers and regain his solitude as quickly as possible. It was the only thing capable of assuring him of that semblance of security, like that of prisoners in an isolation cell at a maximum security prison. Milos had placed himself in his own slide towards death for years now. The last months spent in the world of the feelers had accelerated his process of self-destruction. He was at the threshold of the point of no return. He was playing Russian roulette with more and more bullets. But now there was Eva, and even though she was as Russian as the roulette, she inspired him with much less morbid thoughts. The food, the alcohol, the purring of the engines, and his accumulated fatigue were finally enough for Milos to slip into the sleep of those sunk into a coma. The husky voice that had become familiar took him from the arms of Morpheus. She was seated on the seat facing him and was leaning forward to speak to him. Her face was very close to his. "Do you have it with you?" she said without preamble. "What are you talking about?" responded Milos, his mind still foggy and in the grips of a terrible migraine.
"The magazine."
"Yes, of course, the magazine," he said, beginning to search the pockets of his coat. He took it out and put it on a table before Eva, scrutinizing her expression as she flipped the pages before arriving at that of the famous photograph. Eva observed the document and shook her head.
"All this makes no sense. You said you found this magazine in Paris, and I have never set foot there. Of course it is me in the photo, but I have no memory of who could have taken it or where. I have never given a contract to this magazine to use my image, but the writing and the telephone number are mine. Who are you, Milos? And what do you want from me?"
Virgil appeared and notified them of their imminent landing, which put an end to their conversation. Chapter 11. Strapped in his seat, Milos tried to find some landmarks to identify the place where they were about to arrive. Virgil had spoken of an ocean, and they had flown about 4 hours towards the southwest, which should have put them somewhere along the American west coast. It was still night, and looking outside furnished no useful clue. Milos was even more worried to not see the normal lights of airport runways. The jet began its final approach and landed without the least bump in the absolute night. Milos, completely disoriented, left the aircraft accompanied by Virgil and Eva, and they joined a group of vehicles stationed a small distance away. The temperature was warm, and a breeze dirty with dust reminded Milos of a place in the desert he had visited a few months earlier. The jet, which had not shut down its engines, began to move, and in a few seconds was nothing more than an incandescent point in the nothingness. The trio took their places in an imposing SUV that resembled an evil scarab. Two other scarabs escorted them, and the convoy moved rapidly along the runway that their jet had just departed from. The runway never seemed to end, and Milos realized that they were on a road visibly open to traffic. Eva seemed to find the experience wildly exciting. but Milos found that Virgil seemed more like a spymaster in service of an occult power than an amateur patron of the fine arts. They rolled along in silence towards the west for another 45 minutes. Eva soaked up the energy of the region in a semi-conscious state. Virgil stared at Milos with an increasing intensity, which left him more and more ill at ease. The day dawned on a desert landscape as they arrived at their destination. Behind them to infinity, ochre sand dunes lay lazily here and there, punctuated by some anemic-looking cacti. Before them, the desert and the Pacific Ocean crashed in an age-old combat, and the result was a striking beauty which filled Eva with joy and plunged Milos into a frozen abyss of pure panic.
"Welcome to Garra del Diablo, Baja California," exclaimed Virgil, savoring the expression of terror congealed on Milos's features.
Chapter 12. The performance of the fusion ballet was planned for the same evening, and Eva spent the day inspecting and testing the installations put in place by a small army of technicians who disappeared as if by magic once their task was accomplished. She reserved the last hours before the beginning of the ballet to prepare herself mentally and physically, forbidding anyone to interrupt her. A yacht had dropped anchor, and on the deck one could see the 50 invitees who were going to have the chance to participate in the spectacle that evening. Virgil had disappeared into one of the tents set up to shelter the invitees and the personnel. Milos was alone on the beach and was seized by a terrible anguish. He had no means of fleeing this place. The feelers had chosen it precisely for its total isolation. At the time of the trance, Milos had approved this choice, being reassured by its isolation and amused by its name, Garra del Diablo, Claw of the Devil. That evening, one more feeler had pushed his extreme vibe for one vibration too far and remained on the beach after the other's departure. The Claw had caught up with him, like so many others whose vibrations the VJ Milos had led. For him, it was just one more anonymous kid who would never see the sun rise again. But someone had done a great evil to lead Milos back to that place. "If it's for some kind of revenge, why not just have killed me?" he wondered. Virgil and Eva must be the instruments or the leaders of this machination. Too many questions, not enough answers, and above all, no escape route. And if all this was only a gigantic coincidence, Eva could not be led to this, not the Eva who was so pure. Chapter 13. The sun had embraced the ocean, and on the beach, the participants in the spectacle were assembled around the stage. A religious silence reigned, which Milos could not stop himself from finding fatal. He would have liked so much to speak to Eva and to see her before she made her performance. The stage was illuminated with the last rays of the falling star, and Eva materialized in its center. She held her arms perfectly straight along her body and was completely nude. Her skin radiated with a spectral illumination, as if she was covered with a sheen of moonlight. The silence was now complete among the audience, and Eva let it penetrate in all dimensions. The ocean breeze swept her hair. The rhythm of her heart followed that of the tide. She tasted the salt air that filled her lungs and raised her chest. Facing the setting sun, her eyes captured the last solar rays. Then she spread her arms as if to welcome her public, to embrace it, and to invite it to enter into communion with her. Closing her eyes, she raised her arms toward the ceiling and opened her consciousness to the emotions of the public, letting herself be cradled for a few moments as she tried to isolate those on which she would rely to launch her improvisation. Finally, she joined her hands above her head and completed her immersion in the environment of the performance, capturing the telluric pulses which emanated from the inside of the earth and traversed each fiber of her being with the force of an invisible geyser. At that point, she reached a superior state of consciousness, and slowly, her body liberated itself from gravity and rose several meters above the stage, leaving a train of the powder of evanescent diamonds.
she began to turn slowly around herself at the moment when the extremely deep sonority of a sacred Tibetan horn came to purify the assemblage of participants in this pagan ceremony. Milos was subjugated by the oniric spectacle and could not remove his eyes from the levitating body of Eva. It was that moment that Virgil chose to come speak to him. Milos tensed, ready for anything, and above all, for fear. Virgil looked him in the eye. The untainted mirror had disappeared, and Milos could read there the rage and the hatred barely contained and dissimulated behind a smooth mask. That evening, it seemed to Milos that the devil had decided to take out more than his claws.
"He was called Jason. He was 20 years old. He died in this place. You killed him. He was my son."
His voice had the sharpness of a knife that was about to slash the last hopes that Milos had of leaving Garra del Diablo alive. Eva, still weightless, had begun to execute a series of movements of classical dance, accompanied by perfectly synchronized music, which seemed to emanate from her body.
"So you're going to kill me in turn?" said Milos in a white voice, posing a purely rhetorical question of which he was sure of the response.
He turned his regard away from the tormented abysses that Virgil's eyes had become, where he saw only his own destruction, to focus on Eva, which had brought him back to life over the course of the last few hours spent in her company.
"I am not going to kill you. She is going to."
Virgil struck, like the bullfighter driving the last sword before the final stroke. Eva captured a new field of emotions coming from the audience. The energies were strong, somber, intense, dramatic, and thus very interesting to use. The blackness of the night began to set in, and she judged the moment ideal to change the course of her improvisation by letting herself be carried away by this wave of shadows. She let herself fall onto the stage and undertook a composition which evoked a hunted animal. She ran, stumbled, struggled, imprinting on the space of the enveloping night blood-red marks which rested in suspension after her passage, and little by little formed a tragic, moving sculpture.
"You lie!" cried Milos, who was still captivated by Eva's performance, and who felt himself almost physically submerged by the emotions that she provoked, as if they were amplified.
"You are right. I should re-establish one truth. My real name is Hector. But that is not really important for you. I searched for you. I found you. And I gave you Eva. Because one cannot kill someone who is already dead. I offered you that which you no longer hoped for. I gave you back the taste of life. And this evening, I am going to take all this away, like you took away my son."
The flux of emotions on which Eva traced her performance was more and more terrible. It was a torrent of lava infusion that had just struck a swamp of fear. At this moment she had the choice of continuing to make the fusion on this deleterious theme, or to orient her dance in a lighter direction. She decided to push her experiment still farther, and to abandon herself completely to this chaotic pulse which rose inside her like a savage orgasm. Milos was completely captivated by Eva, who had transformed herself into a veritable succubus shaken by a voodoo convulsion. The words of Hector reached him through the noise of his super-amplified emotions. His breathing was staccato, and a cold sweat burned his feverish eyes.
"I hope that you appreciated your last meal on board my plane. My chef conceived it especially for you. By adding a pinch of last-generation nano-implants, which henceforth will be part of your cortex." Hector enjoyed the growing suffering that devoured Milos.
Eva's body, which had again levitated, was shaken by violent spasms, pushing her extremities to the point of dislocation. Yet her movements followed a wild choreography tamed by a sonorous weft, which conferred a troubling aestheticism to the ensemble. She then reached the paroxysm of the fusion, rearing up, arms and legs crossed, facing the starless sky, elevating herself in the air, carried by the last beats of Milos's mad heart.
Thank you for listening to Call Me, written by Alain Besançon and performed by Darren Elliker. We hope you enjoyed this free audiobook. You may discover other titles from the same author at www.alainbesancon.com.